Good morning and welcome to today's Land Use and Sustainability Committee meeting. Today is Tuesday, December 15th, 2020. This meeting is being held virtually by Zoom due to the COVID pandemic. We encourage the public to participate. Let me give you a few numbers so that that is able to take place. You can join by calling a couple numbers, 929-205-6099 or 888-475-4499. The meeting ID number is 860-9655-8980. So that's your ID number if you're joining by Zoom as well, 860-9655-8980. If you want to be recognized, we ask that you try and be recognized when your item is being heard. And you just, if you're on Zoom, you raise your hand or press star 9. Delighted to be joined by my commission colleagues, committee colleagues, Commissioner Areola and Commissioner Gongora. I also see that Vice Mayor Minor is with us. Exciting meeting as always, and this is the last scheduled meeting of 2020. So I want to start by thanking everyone for everything they've done for making this year as productive as it has been. With that said, let me recognize Assistant City Manager Alina Hudak to see if she has anything to share or any announcements for us before we begin.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Commissioners. Happy holidays to everyone. Since the agenda published, the only announcement I have is the addition through addendum of item number 10, discussion regarding an ordinance amendment pertaining to a building height increase in strategic commercial areas to incentivize office uses. I believe that Mr. Mooney also has some comments relative to items 5 and 6. Tom?
Yes. At the request of the sponsor of item 6, Commissioner Steinberg, she's requested that item 6 be merged with item 5. They're both very similar as they both involve motions from the Sustainability Committee. And so she will become a co-sponsor of item number 5, but item 6 will be merged with number 5. And so when item 5 comes up, that will also include number 6.
Thank you for those announcements, Assistant City Manager and Mr. Mooney. Just in terms of our sequence today, we are going to start with two items related to Sunset Harbor. They were noted on the agenda as having a time certain. That's item number 2, a discussion pertaining to lot size, lot aggregation, parking requirements in Sunset Harbor. Commissioner Areola is the sponsor. And I think that's also a very good setup for the addendum item. Item number 10, which is the discussion regarding a potential height increase also in Sunset Harbor. So with that, unless anyone else has anything to offer, we are ready to go. So Commissioner Areola, on item number 2, you're the sponsor. Would you like to kick us off or have someone from the administration do so?
Yeah, I'll give a little bit of history, and all of us have voted on this, so you already know the history, but for folks who may not understand what this the discussion item is trying to accomplish. A little bit about obviously Sunset Harbor. It's experiencing a lot of change that's accelerated because of the pandemic economy that we're living in. And in order to protect the unique neighborhood we've created, I'm asking that we really start thinking about preserving what we love about the neighborhood and, plan for what else we want to see here. Recently we passed an ordinance limiting formula retail and restaurants to preserve the uniqueness of our neighborhood and protect some of our locally owned businesses. We've also passed on first reading an ordinance that prohibits nuisance uses, things like psychic tarot card readers, souvenir t-shirt shops, tattoo parlors, etc. It's necessary to do these things so that we don't have we don't attract blight. The original title of this referral, lot size, aggregation, parking requirements, was intended to further examine the appropriate type and scale of the development of a changing Sunset Harbor. Recently, hosted a town hall attended by over 70 members of the Sunset Harbor community, business owners as well as residents. And then the neighborhood itself has taken upon itself to create a neighborhood vision plan that I thought was really well thought out. And that's, I think, one of the things that we want to talk about today and that's been included in our packages. So with that, I want to turn it over to maybe Tom and get his thoughts and observations about zoning in the area, as well as the neighborhood vision plan.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. I think Commissioner Ariello laid out the item very well. As you're aware, this first came before you in October, and it was discussed with some of the items that we had recommended that are in the memo. These include the modifications to required off-street parking in light of the Sunset Harbor Garage, log aggregation requirements, lot size requirements, and potentially CUP requirements for larger establishments. One of the reasons that it was moved from the October 14th meeting to today was to have the town hall. It was a very well-attended town hall. The neighborhood vision plan was also discussed. And what we recommended in the memo is that if there is consensus on some of the items that are in the memo, as well as the neighborhood vision plan, that the administration be directed to come back to you in January with a draft ordinance. There's a number of items in the vision plan that are aspirational, but there's also a number of items in the vision plan that can be codified, particularly the recommendations on height for the larger area. Unlike the previous proposal regarding an incentive for office height within Sunset Harbor, this particular plan looks at height more holistically and basically recommends that the area along the perimeter, this would be I-1 areas as well as CD2 areas south of 18th Street and CD2 areas to the west of West Avenue or to the east of West Avenue, that a height limit be set forth that is an increase of what is there now, but not all the way up to 75 feet. Basically, the heights are staggered based upon the location of the properties. There are suggestions that some areas go up to as high as 65 feet, suggestions that other areas that are currently 40 feet in height go to 50 to 55 feet. We think overall it's a good approach and that we could easily put those within a code amendment. There are some things that are being proposed that are going to be difficult to codify. These are things like government services, rooftop activities to be determined with specific development criteria. But there are some very identifiable and measurable items that can be incorporated into an ordinance. And this would include things like minimum line of sight requirements and setbacks. So with that said, this is something that we think would be overall good for the area. And we would recommend that you direct us to prepare an ordinance based upon the more measurable facets of the neighborhood vision plan, as well as some of the things that we've laid out in the memo, and that we come back to you in January with that ordinance. And Mr. Chair, I know that you had said you had also wanted to discuss item 10 as part of that. Did you want to go over that after we've concluded number two?
Yes, let's okay. Conclude item number two.
Okay.
And then we can address that. One of my colleagues, I believe, is still having a little technical difficulties, Commissioner Gongora, but I know we're working on that. And Tom, if I heard you right, sort of the punchline, if you will, is you think once we're completed with this discussion today, that you should take what you have in this item, the neighborhood vision plan ordinance, and then bring it back to us in January.
Correct. Yeah, we would need to actually develop an ordinance because the neighborhood vision plan is actually a document that is more illustrative and point bullet point based. And what we would need to do is actually put it into the form of a formal ordinance where we identify the zoning districts that would need to have the amendments. And then we would bring that back to you in January.
Okay, let me bring it up here. I see we have at least one individual from the public. I don't see my colleagues' hands. at this point. Why don't we hear from the public and get some feedback right away? So first up is Wayne Roberts. Wayne is recognized for.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good, very good. Good morning. Thank you for joining.
So, being a advocate for residents, I'm very concerned that every meeting is about more height, more density across Miami Beach. Sunset Harbor will do very well without extending more height, more density. It's very valuable land in its current form, its current density. It has many usability functions at its current heights and density. And there's absolutely no need to extend more value to the developers and less value to residents. It's happening across all of the western side of Miami Beach. It's affecting, it will affect quality of life in this town dramatically. Even the instance of commercial where 95% of the employees of the city of Miami don't work here but commute here, and not requiring additional parking, with all these developments, to extend more money to the developers is inappropriate. It's an abuse of our function as a city where it's being manipulated, and the narrative is not for the residents' interest, but developers' interests. And we need to take a step back and review what our planning issues are, what we perceive Miami Beach to be 10 years from now. So far, what I'm hearing, it's all negative. It's going to negatively impact the quality of life for residents at the gain of billionaires and without really getting an opinion from a professional that is not biased, that's not selected by the city's centric developers' interests, and that we really plan this out effectively, and I'm very concerned. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. Before we move on, I just want to check and recognize my colleague, Commissioner Gongora, make sure everything's working. Commissioner Gongora, are you with us?
Can you hear me? I've called them through my phone now.
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, I can okay. hear you.
Okay, great. Okay. I'll speak through my phone and watch you through Zoom. Thank you.
Wonderful. And just a reminder, we ask each individual from the public to give 2 minutes. Our representative from the city attorney's office, Nick Clure, just will help us out. If by chance you're mid-thought or you absolutely need a little more time, we do our best, but it is 2 minutes per individual. I see the next speaker ends in 9503. If you would please state your name for the record.
Commissioner, that's actually Commissioner Gongora.
Okay, we know his name. That's wonderful, and thank you for your help, Tanya. Bruce Backman is next.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, great. Thank you. In response to Mr. Roberts, this wasn't just proposed by developers. The Neighborhood Vision Plan was our response to the commission's request to come up with a vision for the neighborhood in light of developers' interest in the area. So it's a way of seeing a compromise. I'm glad to see Commissioner Gongora, because one of the first things we would definitely want to see as we move to codify this is to get the massing study and produce images from the city, something that has been difficult to obtain, but that we absolutely need. Regarding parking requirements, I think we need a parking study as well. If we're trying to attract first-class office space, no matter how much capacity there is excess in the garage, people expect in first-class office space to drive into their office buildings. They're not going to walk a few blocks during rain or 95-degree heat. So a parking study should also go along with the massing studies. I hope that our MVP, the team that actually produced it, Marcella Sardi and Mike Rubin, our design architectural firm, who did a wonderful job in this, will be on the call as well to go over neighborhood enhancing features such as side backs, landscaping, and other requirements they would like to see. The MVP is also in response to the number 10, which we'll be discussing later, regarding a single block height increase, and that was sort of going to be designed to be a pilot program for this. We would not want to see a simple height increase there without other requirements to for neighborhood enhancement as well. This is not a simple developer-produced thing or just from the city department. Again, in response to Mr. Roberts, the NDP, the Neighborhood Vision Plan, will go through a process of more town hall meetings, public meetings, so that all the way through, the public, the neighborhood will have a way of responding to the city and expressing their needs and concerns. Thank you.
Thank you, Bruce. The next speaker is recognized as Tempest Modus. Would you please announce yourself for the record? Yes, Tempest Modus is recognized. Could you please? Yes, who's calling, please?
This is Mike Rubin and Marcella Sardi. We were the co-authors of the NVP.
Yes, well, welcome.
Good morning.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good morning.
First, appreciate you taking the initiative to help wed the NVP to the process. Mr. Mooney, many thanks for your remarks. As you all know, and as Bruce has said, the NVP was developed as a proactive response back to a uniform height ordinance that we were presented with, intended for economic diversification, but led to concerns about the specifics of the Sunset Harbor neighborhood. And it was viewed as a blunt instrument where we wanted something much more nuanced. So the idea, of course, was a comprehensive plan and also a set of development criteria that would address both the quality of the environment in the neighborhood, the emerging identity that Commissioner Areola pointed out, that is an emergent identity and it is improving and we look to improve it more, but also to support accretive and desirable development in Sunset Harbor. We see it as a unique neighborhood. It's a unique in that it's a walkable area with a mix of dining that's unique to the city, as well as boutique retail, markets, neighborhood services, an ideal live-work leisure environment that would also presumably be very supportive of the kind of family office that's envisioned that may be a new form of diversification. So it's certainly not a NIMBY initiative. The whole idea is to do exactly what we're doing here, which is to provide criteria that would help guide desirable development projects and could be codified. And some of those things, as Bruce began to discuss, were the setbacks and step downs and street animating uses at ground level of these buildings. They could be part of the code. So we are encouraged and we are looking to remain participants as a neighborhood association with the city and planning agencies so that we could support this process, get it adopted, and link it somehow to the other item on the agenda, which is the single block height increase, which we would ideally like to see as a pilot, because we do have one project that already embeds some of the criteria that would be sought to be developed in the neighborhood vision plan. But we'd, you know, be we're concerned that that whole block also be a vehicle for the very same type of developments where they are pilots that do link somehow, are coupled somehow, and we seek your guidance on that with the neighborhood vision plan effort. So I thank you. Marcella, do you have anything you want to add to that?
No, I just want to, anything, any help that the city needs from us, we're available. We're just really invested in making this happen. Thank you.
Yes, and thank you to both of you for your service. I think the way that you brought this plan forward, bringing the neighborhood, working with the city administration, the sponsor, is really a model that we aspire to. And you mentioned item 10. Once we conclude this item, item number two, we will discuss item 10, that so-called pilot. So stick with us and we'll keep going. Thank you for your comments. Next up is Jeffrey Arison. Jeffrey, you're up.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Good morning. My name is Jeffrey Aronson. I am actually the newest member of the Neighborhood Association and attended the town hall. I have a very simple point here. I think it would behoove all of us to, consistent with what Mr. Mooney suggested, that we look at all of these matters holistically and consistent with the vision plan, and not approach every item, particular height increases, setbacks, parking, et cetera, in an isolated manner. I think that the vision plan is very well put together. It probably should receive more neighborhood input, but I personally don't disagree with just about everything in the vision plan, and I would just encourage this committee to look at the neighborhood in a more global, holistic manner, as compared to just looking at each particular item in an isolated view. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Marilyn Freud, let you.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
You can hear me?
Yes.
Good morning and happy holidays to everybody. I strongly believe in the neighborhood vision. And I think it's really imperative, and I've said this at every meeting, that we work together with the neighborhood meeting and the pilot program for item 10 that we're going to discuss later to go hand in hand. Why? Because what is happening in that block would be the spark that is going to ignite the changes in Sunset Harbor. It's a shovel-ready project. It's a very reasonable height that they're asking for. They're asking for 65 feet. It's not 75. And I think that if we get that started, that will show prospective developers what can be done in Sunset Harbor. And Marcela and Michael have worked so hard on that neighborhood project. And it makes so much sense. And the city has been very receptive. Tom Mooney has been wonderful. And Ricky has supported us and he has sponsored all these items. So let's all work together, but they have to go hand in hand. And that's really the way to do it now. And thank you for listening.
Thank you, Marilyn. Paul Petrella.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, Paul.
Great. Thank you so much, Commissioner Samuel. Good morning, everyone. My name is Paul Petrella. My partner, Ed Fisher, and I are resident owners at Sunset Harbor North Condominiums. I'd like to echo the quality and thoughtfulness of the Sunset Harbor Neighborhood Vision Plan, so beautifully and professionally crafted and articulated by Marcella and Mike, along with the other representatives of the Sunset Harbor Neighborhood Association. I do believe that this plan will help protect the livability, character, and charm of Sunset Harbor. Addressing issues of building height, as is being discussed, density, and other concerns. We know many residents of the neighborhood who have seen this plan and strongly support it. I wanted to especially thank you, Mayor Gelber. I don't know if the mayor is on this call, but I wanted to thank him for encouraging the movement of this plan through the formal process of city government. Really, really appreciate that. We would like to see the vision plan used as a blueprint for future development in the neighborhood, and we hope that this plan will eventually be sponsored and by one or more members of the commission, along with any necessary ordinances that Tom was talking about earlier that will articulate it. Thanks to all of you. the commissioners, the mayor, and land use committee, and everyone involved for all your attention and efforts related to this issue. Thanks for allowing me to speak this morning, and have a great day.
Thank you, Paul. Sue Kill, Rain News.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity to speak. And again, I wish you all happy holidays and congratulations to all of us on this vaccine. Just a couple of quick comments. I agree with most of the prior speakers. I've lived in Sunset Harbor South for about 12 years. And since I've been here, there's been a repeating pattern of developers proposing projects, the neighborhood mobilizing to try and make sure that it meets our needs, sending letters to commissioners, jumping to attend meetings, doing surveys, and essentially consistently responding to all of these. It would be wonderful if the commission supported this vision statement and adopted a process and a set of principles going forward so that each time we have one of these proposals, it doesn't end up being a fire drill, both for all of you and for all of us. It would be great to have some ground rules laid out that we can all agree to live by. And I appreciate all of the effort that's gone into this, both from the authors of the vision plan and also the commissioners that have taken the time to read it and hold these meetings, and to my neighborhood colleagues that have put in the time and effort to pursue it and promote it. So thanks to all of you. I look forward to seeing the proposed legislation in January.
Thank you, Sue. Next up, Raimi is recognized for 2 minutes.
Good morning. My name is Raimi Walsh. I'm a resident inside the lofts of Sunset Harbor. My question, I agree with most of what's being said, but I want to stay focused on the parking item that's currently specifically before us. And my question slash thought, since one of the other items in front of us is the proposed height increase, and collectively, both the commissioners and the residents of the neighborhood are all in favor of working together to find a way to codify whatever aspects of the neighborhood vision plan we can, and protect the integrity and, you know, working together. I apologize. Doesn't it make sense to hold off on altering parking aggregation until we figure out, are we going to allow buildings to be taller as a, because that's certainly going to impact need. And I apologize if it's a much simpler formula and I just don't know about it. But that's my question on this issue. Thank you.
Thank you for your question, Raimi. Just from a process standpoint, we've got at least one other individual from the public. We'll bring it back to the virtual dais. We will have discussion, including parking, and then there will not be a vote on parking today. I believe it was the recommendation of the city administration to bring that back in January. And again, just so everyone's on the same page, we'll also be discussing item 10. So that's sort of the roadmap. But let's see if we have anyone else left from the from the city. I do see Sarah De Los Reyes, who is the, I believe, the president, chair of the Neighborhood Association. Sarah.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Sarah.
Hi. Thank you very much, commissioners and mayors, for actually taking this up. The Neighborhood Vision Plan is very important to us because, number one, it allows the city to help us craft a neighborhood that we all would enjoy and we'll be happy with. And the input from the neighborhood is very important as we do the workshops together and we address, you know, the whole document and the whole area as we see it in heights or in setbacks or in parking. I do agree with parking that if you have class A parking, the person is not going to go all the way to the parking garage. But you know, the discussion will be, you know, will be set to actually have that discussion about the parking and the lot aggregation. I'm happy to reduce that. This way we don't have a lot of height. We like the height of the neighborhood. In the vision plan, we know that we have to go a little bit higher. We know that the streets were raised. We know that the buildings have to be a little bit higher than what it is because of the water table. But I would agree with everybody, and I hope that we continue this journey and with our neighborhood and my team, which is I have a fantastic, great team that helps out a lot to get this done. And thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments, Sarah. And again, thank you for all the residents, for all the efforts you put forward. I see no other hands. Let me bring it to the virtual dais here. And let's see which of my colleagues wants to offer any comments. If not, let me see. Seeing no hands, let me offer a couple thoughts. First, I really like the neighborhood vision plan. I think that's excellent work. I think it brings a holistic view. I think one of the comments from the community was they want to see an integrated approach. So I like that. Second, I like the idea of seeing images and massing. We've talked about that before. We've actually passed something on that. So I think that's an important element. Directionally, I'm comfortable with the NVP. I'm comfortable with many elements of what's being put forward, though obviously I look forward to seeing the details. The parking is something we heard from a lot of residents. So that would be one that I do have real questions about. I wonder where that's applicable to reduce, if at all. I wonder about the financial impact. So I would just call that out. That's always a complex trade-off. But I like directionally where we're at, and I understand we're going to hear this further in January. So those are my initial comments. Commissioner Arias. Ricky, you're recognized.
Yeah, I was taking off mute, lowering my hand. Lots of good comments from the public. I think we're moving in the right direction, trying to create a mini master plan for Sunset Harbor. There's so many great things here, and we want to capitalize on the great things and try to prevent mistakes from happening. There's still a lot of work to be done in the neighborhood, but I do think that we've got some interesting opportunities, and I do think we're putting together a really exciting plan. So I'm excited to keep pushing it forward.
Thank you for that, Commissioner. Commissioner Gongora.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. My audio is working. Good morning, everybody. I echo the comments of my colleagues on this item. I congratulate the neighborhood for coming together. I know you've been working many years to try to make the neighborhood better and ensure there's the right mix between residential, commercial elements and development. I like the visual that you have titled A Starting Point, which illustrates the height zones you're looking to create. I look forward to this coming back in January with perhaps some land use ordinances that we can implement to give this vision a reality. I look forward to seeing what the massing and studies would look like. I also, and I think it's going to segue into the next item, I also look forward to looking at Purdy Avenue and what you have darkened as the dark green, which is the applicant that we've been looking at for quite some time that wants to go up the extra 10 feet to 65 feet. And I look forward to some creative ordinances from administration that might give that reality by perhaps looking at parcels that are large enough to go up to the 65 feet while keeping medium and smaller parcels on the block at a lower height. So thank you all for your comments today.
Thank you for your comments, Commissioner Gongora. Tom, I understood at the beginning this was a discussion. We've heard from the community, a bit more of the MVP. Each of my colleagues has spoken. I believe the next step is to bring it back in January. Is there anything further you need from us at this moment in time?
Nope. I think the direction is pretty clear, and we'll come back to you at your January meeting with the draft ordinance.
That's wonderful. Thank you for your help. So at this point, we are now going to go to item number 10, which is...
So, Mr. Chair, by acclamation, we're going to go ahead and move item 2 to the January 2021 with that decision.
Yes. Seeing no objection, Tom, that's exactly what we'll do. Thank you. Thank you for that. So we're going to pull up item number 10, which is a discussion regarding an ordinance pertaining to a building height increase in strategic commercial areas. The sponsors are Mayor Gelber and Commissioner Richardson. And with that, Tom, maybe I could recognize you to sort of kick us off with what is before the committee this morning.
Sure. Just to put this into a larger perspective, as the committee is aware, the proposal to create an incentive for Class A office space through height incentives was originally referred by the commission to the Land Use Committee in the early summer. And a couple of variations of that legislation passed through this committee. The initial legislation included four main areas. It included all of Sunset Harbor, CD2 and I-1, Alton Road, Fifth Street and Terminal Island. Through the land use process, we removed the Fifth Street portion of it. And when the Land Use Committee made their formal recommendation, they recommended in favor of increasing the height on Terminal Island, but did not make a recommendation for Sunset Harbor or Alton Road. The commission then referred Alton Road and Terminal Island to the Planning Board, but deferred action on a referral of the Sunset Harbor portion of the height increase to the Planning Board. The Planning Board transmitted the Alton Road and Terminal Island portions back to the commission. And last Wednesday, December 9th, the City Commission approved at first reading the Terminal Island portion of the height increase, but did not take action on the Alton Road portion and instead re-referred that back to this committee. And that will come back to you at the January meeting. One of the things the commission asked us to provide were some more visuals. And so we will have a more in-depth discussion at the January meeting regarding the proposal on Alton Road. With regard to Sunset Harbor, at last Wednesday's meeting, the commission elected to refer a single block portion of Sunset Harbor to the Planning Board for the height increase. And we attached some draft text that would be part of that. And it basically would allow for up to 65 feet in height, which is a 10-foot increase over what can be currently built within that single block bounded by Purdy Avenue, Bay Road, 18th Street to the north, and Collins Canal Dade Boulevard to the south. The commission referred that to the Planning Board and also to the Land Use Committee for discussion as part of the Neighborhood Vision Plan discussion. We anticipate bringing this to the Planning Board at their January 26th meeting and then to the commission for first reading in February. But we wanted to at least bring this to the Land Use Committee prior to the January Planning Board meeting. So that's basically what this is. Within that block, there is one property owner who wants to avail themselves of this 10-foot height increase. And in some of our briefings, the administration and the city attorney's office has been asked to take a further look at the text to ensure that it would apply to office and also to try to reduce the scope and the boundaries of the properties that could take advantage of this. And so based upon that comment, those comments and whatever feedback we get from you today, we will certainly take that into consideration when finalizing the draft for the Planning Board. That's all I have for this. I think there are some people from the public who may want to comment on it. And if there's any specific questions, either Nick or I can answer the questions.
So, Tom, thank you for that. Just to be clear then, what's before us today is the potential height increase on the one block from north of, on Purdy, from north of Day to 18th. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And second, could you please clarify, is there a desired action from this body today or input to feed either January land use or the Planning Board? What type of action is on the table as you would see it?
We're seeking comments and feedback to inform the drafting of the legislation for the Planning Board meeting in January. If you want to provide a recommendation, you certainly can. but this is strictly advisory. So basically what we're looking for is comments and feedback from the land use committee members.
Wonderful. That's clear. And let's see. Let me first check, see if my colleagues are up, but also I'm going to recognize folks from the public. So Tracy Slavens, I believe, let me let Tracy explain who she represents, but I see her hand. So Tracy, you're recognized. Could you please explain who you're representing? And we welcome your thoughts.
Good morning, Commissioner and everyone. My name is Tracy Slavens. My address is 1900 Purdy Avenue. I'm here on behalf of Sunset Land Associates in support of this height ordinance for Sunset Harbor. We've been working with staff in the neighborhood on this ordinance since the summertime. And it started essentially when my client determined that there was indeed a strong market for Class A plus office space in Miami Beach, but no real supply of it. They decided to add a 30,000 square foot office component to their project and set about for redesigning the building. But as they did that, they realized that you can't actually build Class A office space in the existing 55 foot frame of height limitations. Class A office space typically needs 14 foot ceiling heights, and it's just very difficult to accomplish under the code when you also are accommodating ground floor retail and parking within the building. So then it was determined that in conversations with staff that there were a number of strategically located commercial areas that should be incentivized to attract Class A office. And this height ordinance in its initial draft was born. It's traveled down a bit of a winding path, as Tom described to you, over the last 4 months. And it has been bifurcated in various ways, which brings us to today and the discussion about Sunset Harbor. We think it was right to bifurcate Sunset Harbor. It really is a special neighborhood, and it does deserve special consideration from those other areas. We also wholly support the vision plan, and I personally, as a resident of Sunset Harbor, do support it and have volunteered to help work on it as well. But the vision plan is in its initial draft phase, and there are areas of Sunset Harbor, like my client's property, that are prime for redevelopment now. And so we've drafted with staff input and you know, in concert with our sponsors, a pilot ordinance that we think will help to set the vision plan forward, see if the vision plan works, and also implement that Class A office in the neighborhood that we need so badly to support our local economy, our small businesses, and to diversify Miami Beach's economic resiliency with office uses and a little bit away from some of the entertainment and tourist uses that we rely on so heavily, but that are suffering right now. So we believe that what's being proposed to you and what's been referred to the planning board is an appropriate compromise and an amazing first step for Sunset Harbor to realize its full potential as a real neighborhood that can support business, residents, and visitors alike. So I do have some slides because there were some questions about massing and what the buildings will look like, et cetera. If you'll allow me a couple of minutes, I'll just take you through them very quickly.
Yeah, so, if we could do the quick version, Tracy, if we could do the quick version, 2 minutes would be great.
Okay, great. So, PJ, if you could just skip to slide number 4. So the pilot program that's described in the ordinance is the block between Bay Road, Purdy Avenue, Dade Boulevard, and 18th Street. The Lofts of South Beach is on the corner. The Sunset Land Associates property is in the center of the block. And then there are some small businesses on the northern end of the block. Next slide, please. This is a rendering of the Sunset Land Associates building with and without the height increase. So the image on your left is a 55-foot building, and the image on your right is a 65-foot building. As you can see, it allows for the taller heights between floors, but it doesn't materially change the design of the building from an aesthetic or human scale. It maintains the ground floor retail. It maintains the parking, but it does allow for those 14-foot ceiling heights on the office floors. The interesting thing about the ordinance that's in front of you, and I think something that emphasizes that this is a pilot for the block, is that it does have a sunset clause. You know, in working with the neighborhood, it was very clear to us that there was a need to make sure that the neighborhood vision plan is what's ultimately implemented, but that there's also a true interest and support for certain projects moving forward now. So the ordinance in front of you limits the 65-foot height, creates some setback requirements to achieve buildings like this that do step back, that do create a street front presence, that do incorporate landscaping and open air on the ground floor with some shade. But really, you know, looks to the vision plan to create the permanent regulations. Next slide, please. Next slide. Next slide. One of the questions that was raised by the neighborhood is what happens on the corner. And something that Commissioner Gongora mentioned earlier was whether there are parcels large enough to accomplish taller heights. The corner lots...
Mr. Chairman, sorry, two minutes are up.
Okay.
Okay, Tracy, if you could try and wrap it up.
I'll wrap it up. Yeah. Sure, absolutely. Okay. So we did do a couple of massing slides. This one is number one, and if we go to slide number 10, you can see what the neighborhood massing looks like. This really shows you what buildings could be redeveloped based on what's existing today and what we know of their leasing. So there is some opportunity for additional height in Sunset Harbor, but it is relatively limited. And we hope that the staff can take a deeper dive into this. This is just a preliminary conceptual massing. But, you know, we have worked with the neighborhood to try to answer a lot of their questions. And we think that what's in front of you is a great ordinance that'll help us create new jobs, support our local businesses, and really address the needs of our economy for Class A office. So with that, I'm here to answer any questions you might have.
Okay. Let me see if any of my colleagues have any questions. Let's see, I do see Commissioner Arriola. Commissioner Arriola.
thought that was a pretty nice presentation. I mean, with this particular project, the project across from Maurice Gibb Park, I like it a lot. I mean, I think it's beautiful. And, you know, let's remind ourselves what's there now, which is just a empty grass lot with a falling chain link fence, which been there for, you know, as long as I've been in this neighborhood. I think replacing with something of this, you know, design and, you know, mixed use will be a good thing for the neighborhood. And, you know, I encourage us to support it.
Thank you for that, Commissioner. Commissioner Gongora's hand is up. Commissioner.
Sorry, I have to unmute on my cell phone. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. This obviously, this particular ordinance and this building has been before this committee and discussed at neighborhood meetings for quite some time. It does seem to be incorporated into the neighborhood vision that we just looked at in the prior item and has become a much more modest height request than we saw initially. It barely looks different when I look at the two photos, except for the floors are obviously higher, which seems to be the big difference. So I think that's good. It's moving in the right direction. As I stated on the last item, I just would like to make sure that any potential height increase that we ultimately approve only gets done on significantly large parcels on the block that are able to absorb and incorporate that height. And this seems to be the largest parcel on the block. That's my comment.
Thank you, Commissioner Gongora. And we do have a few folks from the public, so we're going to go there any second now. But Tracy, I do have a question for you related to sunset provisions. You know, one of the things sometimes you hear from the community is there's a lot of time and energy put into ordinances and drafts and all these discussions, but then they don't see something built. So could you please describe specifically what the sunset provision is and when the people would actually see something if it is the will of the commission ultimately to do so?
Yes. So the ordinance for this pilot block contemplates a 65-foot height for buildings with office uses, but still that maintain ground floor retail. It creates setbacks for the buildings that allow for more light and street presence to benefit the pedestrian. And it provides a sunset clause that would cause the ordinance to expire on December 31st, 2022. That way, if there is not development, it's not like you've created an ordinance that's going to last forever and not encourage what's needed, you know, in the marketplace today. And additionally, the sunset clause was intended to encourage the vision plan to be accelerated to the greatest extent that we can and make sure that the uniform development requirements do get applied, you know, in an appropriate way throughout the neighborhood. But it is important to test the waters first. So that's really the goal here.
Okay, thank you for that. Let's go right to the public. 2 minutes for each individual. Let's start with Wayne Roberts, please.
Let me say that Tracy is very eloquent and the developers are very smart to hire her. She's very good. I don't have a problem with Purdy. I have no problem really with Sunset in a major way. On a specific basis, pilots, one block. I don't want this to transfer, you know, or Terminal Island. I think that's the right project for that island. But I have a very big problem with having a 50% increase on density and height along Alton Road, along the entire commercial district from, you know, all the way up past Lincoln Road, all the way down to Fifth. It's the wrong plan. It will create an environment that's unsafe, lack of parking, lack of quality of life, lack of assets of among the residential properties that commercial district. It doesn't support what we need as residents in terms of the types of businesses that would live there. It doesn't equate to more jobs for Miami Beach. I suspect, just like the employees that work for the city, 95% of them will commute into the city, creating traffic. It is not the right plan. It will be mostly commercial anyway for second story businesses or third story businesses that will not offices. We have 200,000 square feet of office space that's Class A that's not occupied today in Miami Beach. That we have over 20% unoccupied. There are a lot of reasons that Alton Road should not go forward. I just wanted to make that point. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Roberts. I believe you're aware right today is strictly Sunset Harbor, the one block, but thank you for your input. Sarah De Los Reyes is recognized.
Oh, can you hear me now? I think I'm on mute now.
Yes, Sarah.
Okay, I have two questions, one for Mooney. If what is going to be the height of the building if it's not a Class 8 office on that block? That's number one. And number two, the top of the buildings, like if 65 feet for the whole block, at least Sunset Harbor, the South Tower, would not want to see on the top of the building in the corner a big parapet. Once the building is 65 feet, a big parapet to hide the air conditioning and the elevator that is open, that is part of it that they can actually put up there. So it's like the building that's being built next to the loft is very good. It's flat on the top. It probably has some trees on the top, so it will be all open. So I just want to make sure that if we actually, my input is that if the rest of the building that will be built, if it's not Class A, fine. If it is Class A, we do not want like a parapet that is going to go like 10 feet or additional feet that is not part of the 65 feet. Those are my two questions to add to this block. High rise.
Thank you for that, Sarah. Tom, would you mind giving us sort of the latest thinking we have, if we do, on those specific?
Sure. Under the code now, the maximum building height for the one block area is 55 feet. It's 50 feet, and the DRB can allow up to 55 feet in order to accommodate higher floor to ceiling heights at the first level. The proposal herein would be to allow for an additional 10 feet for Class A office space. So it would only be for office uses above the ground floor. With regard to allowable height exceptions, which is what Sarah was referring to, there are certain elements of a building that are considered under the code as height exceptions. And these include things like elevator bulkheads above the roof, stairwells that go above the roof, mechanical equipment that's screened within a specific area like a cooling tower or an emergency generator. Those are all allowed to be go above the maximum height. And they, with the screening elements, some of those can be as high as 25 feet above the height. If, as part of the vision plan, there is a desire to limit those exceptions or limit the areas that those exceptions can go to so that the entire roof does not exceed the maximum height, we can certainly incorporate those into the vision plan ordinance in order to further clarify where those height exceptions may occur on the taller buildings.
Thank you for that, Tom. Let's now go to I believe it's Mike and Marcella, recognized as Tempus Modus. So if you could, we welcome your thoughts on this.
Thank you. Can you hear us?
Yes, we can.
We would agree that the DECO project that Tracy just presented is exemplary. It's a project that went through the more torturous process, both for the neighborhood and the developer, that we're seeking to humanize for the NVP. But the result was that there was a mix of concessions and design considerations as presented that included setbacks and a street animating podium, a variety of the kind of criteria that is sought in the MVP and would be very desirable. Diagram or the exhibit that Tracy presented, though, at the end, where you see those considerations visualized with the DECO project and then the massing of a project next to it that doesn't have any of those considerations is the source of concern. So the question, I guess this is really a question for Tom Mooney, is how within this single block ordinance, because we would like to see this project take shape, and we see it as a pilot, do you provide language that requires the kinds of setbacks and street animating elements that we do desire so that we don't get a cart before the horse problem? Again, the DECO project exemplifies a number of those criteria, but the another project might be contemplated that doesn't, and it represents some concerns even with the sunset provision. So that's really a question how we might incorporate that.
Yeah, let's pause for just a second and stick with us here. Tom, if you may, the gist of it is what we're seeing potentially for that project, would it be consistent for the whole block? Would all of those things, the setbacks, et cetera, some of the features that people may or may not like about that project, would that be consistent?
Things like setbacks, clear pedestrian paths, and clearly measurable benchmarks can be included in the ordinance, either the one block pilot, and certainly it would be part of the neighborhood vision plan. We wouldn't be able to enforce that on built projects such as the lofts because they're existing, but it would apply to any future projects that may be proposed down the line after the project that is the subject of this particular code amendment moves forward and is built.
Okay, thank you for that. Mike and Marcella, other comments you want to add at this point? We may have lost them, and maybe they were complete. So let's keep rolling. Bruce, back.
Hi. So I just want to clarify regarding Tom Mooney. He notes that those elements could be part of the ordinance for a single block height increase. I want to make clear that the draft that I saw from Tracy and the developer does not include those neighborhood enhancing features. Their project design does, and I laud them for that. But as drafted, the current single block height increase includes no such features. So this definitely needs to go back to work and make sure that those features are included if we are going to proceed with a single block height increase, including items such as camouflaging the rooftop structures, strict limits on the height of rooftop features. Right now, parapets are limited to 3 feet, but the DRB has discretion to grant a 25-foot height to a parapet. And that, of course, would be absolutely outrageous, and no one would want to see that. And finally, we need to address the issue, what happens if this incentive to develop office space actually fails? People build office space, and in fact, they are unable to fill the space. What would be the future of that space? Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Bruce. Raimi Walsh is recognized for two.
Hello. Hi, this is Raimi Walsh. I'm a resident of the Lofts. Quickly, I want to thank and acknowledge all of the people in the community that are zealous advocates on behalf of what we want this neighborhood to look like. Mike and Marcella, again, Bruce Backman, Sarah, Marilyn, all of those individuals that really work tirelessly to make sure that things like the specifics and language that's being presented, that it matches up with what we're being sold. That said, my comments are not in opposition to the Deco Capital project, not at all. My comments are that the limiting the height to just one block just feels like spot zoning, especially with the sunset provision. And secondly, if we the amount of time and effort that as a community we all have to put into holding developers' feet to the fire to make sure that the project that they're wanting to build is consistent with what we want. My concern is with limiting the zoning and putting the sunset provisions to just one block. It's de facto allowing Deco Capital to get what they want started. But we're going to be back here again every 18 months, every time a developer wants to do something. And I don't know that it's the best allocation of all of our collective resources to keep fighting the same battles over and over and over, especially when we're all talking about the neighborhood vision plan and having a holistic approach and a long-term vision for what we want. Those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. And I believe our last representative from the public, Julie Weaver, please.
Yes. Hi, good morning. I just want to piggyback on what was just said. I am a resident of 10 years, and I've seen a lot of change in the neighborhood. But I also agree with her. It's been a very taxing year as far as politically. And I don't want to have to keep. We are saying no to the height increase as a neighborhood, okay? And I would hope that the elected officials, by the public, by the citizens that live here, that they would listen to us and not a developer. I agree with her. I don't want to be back here. We're piecemealing things. Then people live in this neighborhood and they like this neighborhood because of what it is. It is not overgrown. It's not overdeveloped. I just walked around in the neighborhood just now. And I will tell you, there's a lot of empty buildings. And I think it was Bruce that had said, what happens if this does fail? And I don't think it's going to bring any more businesses or anything. It's just going to be more taxing on the neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Let's bring it back to the virtual dais. Commissioner Arriola is right.
I support this project. I think it's good for the neighborhood. Like I said earlier, it's replacing what now is a vacant lot that's been vacant for a really long time. And it just it's got a chain link fence around it. I mean, I don't know why I wouldn't be supportive of this project. And as far as the comments that go that, you know, we don't want to be back here every 18 months, I don't want to be back here every 18 months. And that's why we should be adopting the neighborhood vision plan, which I really liked. And, you know, this is a pilot because it's the one that's shovel ready. I mean, this has been lingering for approval for more than 5 years. And the reason we have to keep coming back is because we can never make a decision. And I think we've gotten into a place where we have pretty good, consensus on the project. The developer wants to go forward with it. I think it'll be a great enhancement to the community. It is a pilot, right? We have a theory that there's strong demand for Class A office space, and this will prove or disprove that theory and, support the neighborhood vision plan long term. But someone's got to go first, and we have a project that's ready to go, so I hope we support it.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Gongora?
Thank you. I appreciate the comments of the public, and I do know how difficult it is for residents to really track these items through the commission, the land use committee, the planning board. It gets exhausting. This particular ordinance has been worked on for quite some time and compromised. And I do think there's a way to do this that will protect the residents. And I think that way is, number one, obviously by having it sunset so that a project is ready, moves forward, but that we don't keep seeing others keep coming back over and over, as one of the residents mentioned. I also think that the land use ordinance can be crafted in such a manner that only large lots would get the benefit of this this pilot, for lack of another word, because I think this is the only large lot on the block that could perhaps handle this extra height. And I think that's one way that our planning director and legal could work towards crafting an ordinance that protects the neighborhood. So I guess my question for the planning director is, we've heard from the public, you've heard comments from the commissioner. What do you need from this committee at this point, and where is this going next?
This will be going to the planning board for consideration and transmittal on January 26th. If it's the consensus of the committee for staff and the city attorney's office to work on further modifications to the ordinance to provide for a larger minimum lot size for the taller height to be applicable, I think we can definitely work on that. And if you could provide that direction, that would be great. Nick, anything else that you could suggest, or do you think that's good?
No, Tom, that sounds good to me.
That would be my preference, because it would give some more protection to the residents that are concerned, that have come to accept this parcel but aren't as excited about the thought of it proliferating forward.
Okay. Let me, so we have an item related to the rest of the block. So let me weigh in on a couple thoughts here. First, I've been someone that has argued that we need to take an incremental approach working with the community. I didn't support the broad increases, but there's some better news here today. I very much like, and I frankly use that term quite often, of a pilot. See what works. And the second thing I do like is this sunset clause, you know, and I feel for the residents who have had to put so much time into this, and then to see the parcel lay empty, would be a concern. So I think those are very important steps forward. A couple things, building on Commissioner Gongora's point, we do need to make sure that we protect the residents for the entire block. So whether it is by the lot size, ensuring the consistency that any other parcel would be consistent with this in terms of setbacks and some of the other neighborhood vision plan elements, and or limiting the maximum side of the roof. Tom, what you described was something could be 65 feet, but I think I heard it could be another third higher in reality with some of the things by code, if I heard that right. So I think that's absolutely something that we need to get to. So all of the good elements that some people like about this project, we want to make sure that are captured. And I do want to make sure the reason these two items were heard like this is to make the connection. So if there are any other themes or ideas from the MVP that should be brought into this, I would like that. For example, the MVP talks about streetscape enhancements. And I know we've talked about maybe permeable crosswalks or something along those lines, or landscaping. All that MVP goodness should be in this one pilot for me to want to get by. So those are my comments. Commissioner Arreola, is your hand, is that a new request or is that from the last time? Ricky?
Last time, sorry, last time.
No worries. Tom, so you've heard now the public, you've heard from all of us. I don't see any other hands. Ricky's is up, but he wants to donate that $10 any minute, so that's fine, and I do it often.
Oh,
too. But Tom,
ignore that hand, Mark. I'm on my phone right now. I walked with my PC, and the PC must still have it up. You can put it down for me. That'd be great.
No worries. I just want to make sure that your comments are being heard as well. Tom, do you have specific issues? You need anything else from us? Do you feel like you have enough sense from this body to then take this and put it on paper so we can all look at it?
Yeah. To confirm, what we'll do is prior to the planning board, prior to finalizing an ordinance version that we will notice for the planning board, we're going to take another look at the minimum lot size requirements for eligible properties based upon this conversation. And then we're also going to look at imposing stricter requirements on allowable height exceptions so that you don't have those overloaded. So I think with those two things, if the commission or if the committee wants to conclude this by acclamation, we can take it to planning board with that direction.
Okay. Colleagues, is everyone okay with that at this moment in time? Any objections? I saw our head. Yeah, I think that's the will of this body at this time. So show that done by acclamation, Tom.
Okay.
Okay, let's move on briefly to item number one. This is our standing project item. This is an opportunity if the city administration has any material issues that they need to share. I will kick us off there. We've got four projects listed: West Avenue, Indian Creek, Palm Hibiscus, First Street. I'm just going to ask the same question, if I may, from the last time, because First Street is the project which we're still sort of in the planning/design. Could I just ask the administration for an update on First Street and the next steps?
Yes, Commissioner Samuel, and for the record, Roy Coley, Director of Public Works, happy to provide that update. Where we stand on the project is we are negotiating with Jacobs Engineering to provide us advanced graphic representation of our options for our water treatment system location. We expect those probably in the month of February. At that point in time, our intention is to have a public meeting and share the results with the community, and then ultimately bring those to land use and or the city commission for a final decision. I have had multiple meetings with various stakeholders in the community recently. Assistant City Manager Hudak and I met with a couple of different groups, and what we have represented to them is that we're not asking the committee to take any votes today or until those graphics are back, and that they don't have to be concerned that a decision will be made without their full involvement, and that before we ask you for any decisions, we will contact them all.
Okay, that is clear and helpful. Thank you for that, Roy. I don't see any other hands. This is really meant for any updates. I'm not seeing anything else that needs to be shared. So we are going to move quickly. Roy, while we got you, timing up, Let's take number four, Roy, while we got you, and then we're going to come back to number three. Let me just introduce number four for a second. It was a request for a public seawall action plan. We have been working on it. Every time we all recognize the importance of seawalls, we have private seawalls, which represent over 90%, but we've got our public seawalls. So with that, Roy, the intent here is to figure out where we're at, any specific vulnerabilities, and any actions required. So if you could take it from there, I'd appreciate it.
Yes, Commissioner Samuel, and currently we have 10 publicly owned seawalls at various phases of design and construction that have been identified as some of the most vulnerable in town. As part of the resolution that the commission passed directing us to prepare a new plan, we are establishing all of the elevations of the public owned seawalls and private owned seawalls, actually. Coincidentally, today, our GIS team resumes flying the drones that are establishing all the elevations of the seawalls. We expect that to be complete, and then we're able to prioritize an action plan with funding issues and identify the funds we have and what funds may be needed that we don't have. We anticipate to return to you somewhere in the neighborhood of June of 21 with that final plan.
Thank you for that, Roy. If I could just ask a couple questions. You mentioned 10 projects. Are those projects currently funded, the 10 that we've identified?
Yes, they are.
Okay. Do we also have funding that comes from the GEO bond? Are there additional projects, or is that part of the 10?
What we have is we have GEO bond funds. We also have some other budgeted funds. And when these projects come up for award, then it'll be determined whether it's more appropriate to use the GEO bond funds or other appropriated funds.
Okay. That's fine that we still got some planning to do. I know this was something we talked about last year. You know, my own comment, would love to move as quickly and expeditiously as possible. I want to make sure... we've had a lot of discussion of overtopping. So one specific thing I think would be important, if there's any overtopping going on that is not addressed by these 10, I would like to be aware of that. And my final comment on this would be, I think it'd be important for the public to understand at least the plans we have, the 10 projects. I sense at times people see issues but are not aware. So I would like to request that we do some communication around that.
Okay, happy to do that.
That'd be great. Let me see if any of my colleagues have anything to add at this point.
I do not.
Commissioner, okay, thank you, Ricky. Seeing no comments, what we will do is we will bring this back in June, and we'll look forward to the communication. We'll look forward to any issues related to overtopping. And if it could be done faster, that it would even be better. But we'll look forward to seeing it when it's ready. Thank you. That concludes item four for now. Item number three. Limitations on big box stores on Lincoln Road. Commissioner Areola is the sponsor. Ricky, do you want to start, or do you want to recognize someone from the administration?
Yeah, let me at least tee it up, right? I think the title explains, you know, at least my concern. I think all three of us have at various times expressed similar concern. And, you know, I think with everything that's happened this year, with a lot of closures of tenants on Lincoln Road and potentially more, and I'm thinking perhaps even the Regal Theater, try to get ahead of this before it becomes a bigger problem than it already is, which is, you know, what do we want to do about limiting big box retail? And so, you know, not to offend any business, but if the Regal Theater were to permanently close and a Lowe's or Home Depot go there, is that something we want or not? I've got an opinion. I don't. But, you know, what do we want to do here with respect to Lincoln Road? So I'll turn it over to Tom, and my guess is Lincoln Road bid and some property owners there also want to chime in on this.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. By way of update, this was last heard by the committee at your November meeting. And at the request of the sponsor, the administration has participated in two meetings with the Lincoln Road bid. One was with the overall bid, the larger bid, and then they created a subcommittee, which also had a meeting on December 2nd. In the revised memo, staff did some research about how other cities around the country have been implementing regulations regarding larger commercial structures. And we've included from cities that regulate this on a smaller size, like, for instance, Guilford, Connecticut. They have limitations ranging from 15,000 to 60,000 square feet. And then it goes all the way up to much larger limitations. Some of these approach 100,000 square feet. One of the things that the Lincoln Road bid subcommittee discussed at their December 2nd meeting was if a square footage benchmark was to be established, what would the most appropriate benchmark be? And at that meeting, a number of 40,000 square feet was tossed around. However, the consensus of that committee, per their own recommendation, was that at this time, the square footage limitation not be implemented by code, but instead that uses be looked at. As far as uses go, we have modified the code a couple of times over the last couple of years to zone out what we characterize as nuisance uses or problematic uses that do not add to the unique scale and character and context of Lincoln Road and actually detract from it. And all those uses we've listed in the memo as being prohibited. So from this particular item really pertains to these oversized type of retail uses and whether or not there should be some type of size limitation. We can continue to explore this. I know that the bid is going to be discussing this at their next meeting on Thursday. They may be providing some more input on this. And what we are seeking is policy direction in terms of whether or not you'd like us to come back with an ordinance that would set forth a size limitation.
Thank you for that, Tom. Let me see if we have any comments. I see Tim from the Lincoln Road bid. Tim, you're recognized. Tim?
Oh, okay. I'm unmuted. Can you hear me?
Yes, Hello? We can.
Great. So, a committee was organized by the bid to discuss this matter, and attendance was almost a full board of directors, though it was a limited committee. And the bid is thankful for the city looking into this matter because the stewardship of Lincoln Road is important to the owners as it is to the city. But when they reviewed mere size as the criteria, it was noted that, you know, perhaps undesirable big box stores could shrink to fit into the sizes available. And it's the belief of the subcommittee, and they voted affirmatively in this direction, was to try and limit the uses rather than merely look at the size. And of course, that's an ongoing discussion with the board. Questions?
Thank you for that, Tim. I see no one else from the public at this point. Let me bring it to the virtual dais. Ricky, I see your hand. I don't know if you've adjusted that.
Or yeah, I did put it back up. Yeah, I mean, the concept of uses versus size is an intriguing one. You know, I'm not sure you can't do both, but yeah, look, I think most of us feel the same way. You know, Lincoln Road 20 years ago is different from the Lincoln Road we have today, where you had a lot of locally owned businesses, mom and pops. It was eclectic. It was unique. It was magical. And that's what made it so popular. And then, of course, with popularity, you know, you drew in a lot of the national big boxes and you pushed out the little guys. And, you know, we ruined a good thing. And so, you know, we don't want to overregulate the private market, but we end up being in a situation like we find ourselves in where now we're going to have to invest you know, $50-60 million of taxpayer money to revitalize a street that, you know, frankly needs it because it's just not competitive with, you know, other destination shopping areas, even our own county. And so this is trying to prevent that in future decades by, you know, preserving what works and trying to keep out things that will destroy a street. And so certain uses, certain big boxes, in my opinion, would destroy the character of Lincoln Road. And I threw out a couple names up there, and I imagine all of us can substitute, you know, retail organizations that wouldn't be conducive to the shopping experience, the pedestrian experience of that mall, possibly cannibalizing the sales of other retailers there and, you know, resulting in further closures. So it's tough to do this right, but I do think we need to work through this to try to, you know, optimize the result.
Thank you for those comments. Commissioner Gar-
Yes, I'm also supportive of this item. We've seen Lincoln Road change over the years for a number of reasons, but I miss the times when there were a lot of independent businesses, more arts-related businesses, more diverse businesses, all of the LGBT organizations, clubs, bars, stores have all moved. So I think that we need to work on this. I'm fine with continuing it to January to let the bid weigh in, but I think we should look at both. I think uses are very important, but I think there needs to be some threshold of square footage that we should look at, something that would allow some of the older theaters to still be converted, but not allow something gigantic to come over. With the threat of Regal Cinemas maybe not being there at some point in the future, it's concerning to think that some big operator could come take over that entire space. So I think this is moving forward in a positive direction, but I would encourage, if we continue this, and it sounds like we are, but the Lincoln Road bid, really look into both uses and some time of minimum size so that they can bring us back their recommendations and we can consider it at our January meeting.
Okay. I see one hand from the public. So let's hear from Mr. Roberts. I'm
very connected to the business community through my life career. I think it would be a mistake, although I love Ricky's proposal, I think it would be a mistake to over-legislate business and what types of businesses, other than maybe pharmacies or how many Starbucks it could be on the block. I just think, you know, it could be an attraction, right? To have the right big box on the block would draw traffic. And that's what they need. They need traffic. And it would be good for the community to have a big box that, you know, that the supplies that we actually need that we don't want to get from Amazon. So I'm a little worried that this will get over-legislated and just be very cautious. Thank you.
Thank you, Wayne. Let me just weigh in as I think we're ready to conclude. Mike, I support the intent, appreciate the sponsor bringing this forward. I agree fully with Commissioner Gongora's remarks that we need to look at size / use. Clearly, this needs to be done in close consultation with the Lincoln Road bid, and so look forward to hearing more from them. And with that, Tom, I think seeing no objection, we could show by acclamation that we would bring this back in January.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. Very good. Let's keep moving. Items 5 and 6 have been merged. I will kick off item 5, invite my co-sponsor, Commissioner Gongora, and I believe Commissioner Steinberg may be a co-sponsor. But we all know the challenge that sea level rise and climate change present. We spend a lot of time talking about adaptation, because that's here and now. We've got water. We've got to do something. But we also want to be good citizens and neighbors in terms of working on our emission side. Emissions are, of course, a root cause driver. And this comes from our sustainability committee. a look, and actually supported by an administration recommendation, to reduce permitting fees for the installation of electric vehicles. So I think this is a very positive step. Before I see Betsy Wheaton with us, Commissioner Gongora, do you want to say anything before we kick it off here?
Sure. I'll just comment briefly. I agree with your comments. I think this is a great initiative that I believe will pass through the commission and probably be on a consent agenda, because clearly we want to encourage electric vehicles. And one of the best ways government does encourage things is by incentivizing, by removing fees to make it easier and more affordable to do so. So I'm a big supporter. And since it's been merged with item six, I've come on as a co-sponsor because I sponsored the resolution at the commission on at our November meeting for the second item coming to be heard, which is the reef line, which I think will be fantastic. I know Commissioner Areola also had urged funding for it some time back. So it's something that the entire city is proud of and creating ecotourism in our city. And I also look forward to seeing that presentation, which was supported by the Sustainability Committee.
Thank you for those comments. With that, Betsy, can you give us the headlines? Betsy, we can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Oh, perfect. Great. So first, I would like to clarify that item number six is going to have to be heard separately. The Sustainability Committee made two motions, one dealing with EVs and the other dealing with the reef line. We do have a presenter from the Blue Lab Society that is going to be presenting on that item. And Commissioner Steinberg has requested to co-sponsor this item about EVs, and Commissioner Gongora has requested to be a co-sponsor of item number six, the motion number two. So just clarifying that for the record. Okay, so to move into this exciting item, the Sustainability Committee is looking for ways that we can expand electrical vehicle charging, photovoltaics, and basically improve how the city is thinking about energy efficiency and emissions. This proposal is that the building department, fire department, and planning department waive fees related to electrical vehicle charging stations for a minimum 2 years. You know, one of the challenges we have with EV is that unless charging stations are available, people are hesitant to buy an electric vehicle. So the more stations that we can have throughout our city, the greater that EV vehicles are going to catch on. So like I mentioned, the request is for the waiving of fees. Both the planning department, fire department, and planning department have agreed that this is something that they can handle. Last year, applications resulted in approximately $5,800 in fees. So this will be minimal impact financially to the city. However, it will have a big impact in terms of expanding electrical vehicle charging. So this is presented to the commission, or excuse me, to the committee for your consideration, and staff is recommending that it move forward to commission with an ordinance for these fee reductions.
And Betsy, thank you for that. So we are talking about the electric vehicles, but just to be clear on the reef line, will that be coming before the committee in January as a separate item? Is that the next step?
So it's kind of confusing because number six says motions from the Sustainability Committee, and there was two motions. So I'm correcting the earlier request to combine the two items. We don't want to combine them. Okay. We need to keep them separate so that we can hear the reef line after this item.
Okay. And are we going to hear the reef line today or at another meeting?
Yes, today. We have Colin Ford from Coral Morphologic who's going to be presenting.
Okay. Great. That's clear as day. We're good. So now we have the electric vehicles. I see no hands. I do see Mr. Roberts' hand. So Wayne is.
A bigger impact will certainly be getting superchargers from Tesla installed in Miami Beach than anything. I don't know what charges you're referring to. I don't know the speed in which they charge. Certainly moving them within the hour that it takes to charge a car is important. I could reach out. I have friends at Tesla who I do marketing for, to see if they could subsidize or do a deal with Miami Beach where the superchargers are installed in Miami Beach and we pay part of it and they pay part of it. I think there's a better plan. I think it's a great idea. I just think, the execution of making Miami Beach more sustainable and more environmentally conscious is needs to get worked on. I don't just think offering free charges for 2 years is really enough. I think it's superchargers, and I think it's Tesla, who's the leader in the space, as a primary solution. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Seeing no one else from the public, Commissioner Gongora.
Thank you. Yes, to Dwayne's comment, I know last year I had meetings with Saul Francis, the parking director at that time, about Tesla and other groups bringing in some of those supercharging stations into the city garages. And it was my understanding that idea was already moving forward. Does anybody from the administration, Betsy, or someone else have information they can share with us about that?
Sure, yes. So we have agreements in place with both Blink and Tesla to install EV charging stations in municipal garages. We're working to have Tesla charging station installed in the Pennsylvania garage. And we currently have 13 dual stations installed in other garages throughout the city.
Okay, that's great. So I wanted to clarify that because I was aware that we were working on that and I had sponsored some item in the past about that. So that is moving forward. With regard to this item, I think this item is a nice supplement to what we're doing in the garages with Tesla and the other groups because it's waiving fees to encourage more charging stations, encouraging people to drive electric vehicles that put less of the harmful fossil fuels and other things out in the environment. We've talked about it a lot with mopeds, how we would like to move even in direction with those towards an electric fleet. So I just see this as another tool in our belts or arsenal, so to speak, to try to make Miami Beach as sustainable and resilient as possible. I think this will pass unanimously, and I'm very happy to move the item forward.
Okay, and I agree with those comments and would second moving the waiver of these electric vehicle permitting fees. Let me just check with my other colleague, Commissioner Arriola. Are you okay? Do you have anything you want to add or any objection?
No, I fully support it.
Okay, great. So we'll show that done by acclamation. On item one, Ms. Wheaton, do you have everything you need? The electrical vehicle permitting item, do you have everything you need?
Yes, we have everything we need, and we'll prepare an item for commission. We'll work with legal on
that. Okay, excellent. And now we're going back. We are going to go to item six because there is the second element of the Blue Lab reef. So let me turn that over to you because you're right there. If you could get it.
Great. Tanya or PJ's team, could you please let in Colin Ford? He's going to be presenting on this item. While we wait for Colin to get in, I want to give a brief overview. The Reefline project is a project that is going to be privately funded that is being led by the Blue Lab Preservation Society. And the goal of this project is to establish an artificial reef / sculpture garden / snorkel trail along Miami Beach. And this group is working with artists from around the world to help curate the project. And they're currently in the permitting phase to understand where these potential sculptures could go off of our shoreline. This item was brought to City Commission in November in the form of a resolution expressing support overall of the concept of the project. The Sustainability Committee did hear the item prior to it going to commission and loved the idea. However, they did want to make sure that any final locations for the project, that the surf breaks were considered to ensure that the surf community would not be affected by this. However, they did love the idea from an ecotourism perspective. Also, the Arts and Public Places Committee heard this item and also was in support. Is Colin, are you on?
Yes. And
perfect.
Let me start my video. Sorry about that.
And Colin Ford is the co-founder of Coral Morphologic, which is a local arts group that is focused on the marine environment. And many of you may be familiar with the Coral Camera. You can see behind Colin his work with the Bridge Initiative. They installed a live camera feed off of the Port of Miami. So it's just absolutely amazing to see all of the animals that we have off of our shores every day.
Thank you.
Handing it over to you, Colin.
Yeah. Thank you, Betsy, thank you for allowing us to present to the committee today the project of the Reef Line. As Betsy mentioned, this is really a collaboration of art and science, but also a celebration of Miami's natural resources and the wonderful marine environment that we have here. And the Reef Line is going to be an opportunity to really showcase Miami in a different perspective than I think a lot of people realize. And the Coral City Camera is sort of one of these projects that has been able to show the world what we have here. And hopefully the Reef Line will serve to bring people to Miami Beach, because we want to create an ecotourism destination that people can access from the beach, from Miami Beach, from the shoreline, where they will be able to snorkel on sculptures that are designed by artists, world-class sculpture installations, which will then become colonized by marine life. So it becomes sort of a real collaboration with nature over time. So I'm going to share my screen real quick just to give you a rundown of the master plan that we have been developing. OMA, the architecture firm that did the design of the Faena Forum, Rem Koolhaas's architecture firm, a world famous studio, has been working with us to design the master plan. And this project starts with as an extension of a public art installation that took place last year during Art Basel by artist Leandro Ehrlich. The Sandcar installation. So the idea is for the Reef Line, eventually it'll be a multi-phase project, and we have to do it in small phases. And as Betsy mentioned, we are currently at the permitting phase working. We have to get permits from the state through the Army Corps. We are working with an engineering firm that the city has worked with before, Cummins Cedarburg. And so we're starting at the southernmost end of Miami Beach near South Beach. This is actually where the county has deployed a number of artificial reefs in the past. Our goal is to make it accessible from public parks. So we identified Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Park between 2nd and 3rd Street as being an ideal access point to the public. Now, since we first proposed the project publicly, we've gotten some feedback, as Betsy mentioned, from the surf community. This is a popular area for surfing. And, you know, the last thing we want to do is create a situation that, you know, either reduces the waves or otherwise has a negative impact on the surf community. So we're listening to them. We have a dialogue with Surfrider. The surfing area of South Beach pretty much is south of Fifth. And of course, over time, we are looking to build the reef line north. So the idea of the reef line is that about every 100 feet or so, there will be an artistic installation connected by a chain of underwater modules, concrete artificial reef modules, so that one can follow it like a trail underwater. So it's kind of like the underwater equivalent of the Underline project that's quite popular to offer public access in an area that previously wasn't fully utilized. Much of this, the bottom here, is just sand. And so it's not where we're really taking an area that has very little biological diversity, and we're going to create habitat that will attract fish and other marine life and create a thriving ecosystem right off the shoreline, which is something that Miami Beach doesn't really have a lot of opportunity. So you can see here, this is kind of like the long-term vision of the project. And that area in red that you see down here at the bottom is the area that has been preliminarily mapped. We've done subsea surveys with the engineering firm. And so this is the area that we have identified to be mapped. We're also working with local universities, University of Miami, Florida International University, and we want in addition to it being we want it to be a place for science, and we want the artificial reef development to be something that Miami is known for. DERM has one of the oldest artificial reef programs in the entire world, and it's something that we should all be proud of, the initiative that's been taken here. So we want universities and we want other institutions to be able to test out certain artificial reef designs and modules in addition to having these world-class art installations. So with everybody's support, this is something that will begin. The ideas for the first sort of opening and deployment to take place about it a little less than a year from now, so that by Art Basel 2021, we will be able to have people, we'll be able to invite them to come out underwater and see the installations that we're working on, the sand, the cars, Concrete Coral by Leandro Ehrlich, and also working with OMA, who are doing the master plan, but they're also coming up with some designs of their own. We're still working. They have a very grand vision, but of course, everything that we do has to be environmentally sustainable. It has to be structurally engineered properly. It has to be deployed properly. There's a lot of things that go into making artificial reefs, So some of these designs are works in progress, but obviously anything that is deployed will be permitted top to bottom in accordance with all the laws of the state and Army Corps. But we would, of course, love to have this project. The project takes place in state waters, but of course it's right off the shoreline of Miami Beach, and we would really like Miami Beach to sort of embrace the project, because we want the access. Provide access from public parks, we can have signage, et cetera. So I think that pretty much wraps up the presentation.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for that. We really appreciate it. We have a couple folks from the public, so let's start there, and we'll bring it back to the dais. Wayne Robert.
A couple of comments regarding the gentleman's comments. I'm a little concerned, I'm more than a little concerned, that this project will happen, according to him, between 2nd and 3rd Street. It will send a lot of tourism south of 5th, where this is not the tourism, spot. So the location bothers me. I suspect that, they have plans. There have been cases where, like in Fort Lauderdale, they put tires back in the 80s, and there's millions of tires that have environmentally damaged the ocean.
I'm sure that Durham and the EPA won't allow, you know, that sort of thing. But if a reef doesn't grow there, what's the plan? Like, what's the expense and what's the plan if it's just, you know, it's just, you know, cars in our waterways rather than a reef as a final outcome? Those are my two comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Wayne. Daniel Seraldo is.
Yes. Hi, good morning, everyone. Daniel Seraldo with Miami Design Preservation League. It's definitely an interesting project. I know it's gotten a lot of publicity. I have gotten some questions from members of the public about the environmental impact. Obviously, seeing the cars underwater and the large concrete looking staircase structure looks very interesting in rendering. But, you know, there's questions as far as hurricane impacts. What happens with a storm surge? How are these structures anchored to the ground? It's mostly sand out there, partly because of the very strong wave action. So I understand now that it is a state jurisdictional question, and I'm assuming they're just here for, you know, the city's support. But I don't know exactly if Durham is here, or if someone could address the potential environmental impacts, and hopefully we can make sure this is a resilient project. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Daniel. Betsy, if I could recognize you in a couple things here. First, could you just address some of the environmental points that were raised? Second, what action, if any, is requested from the city and this board at this point?
Great. Thank you, Commissioner. So as it relates to the environmental concerns, you know, first thing that the permitting agencies are going to look at is existing resources. So do we have existing benthic habitat, corals, sponges, gorgonias in these potential areas? There is required buffer zones around where we do have existing resources. So first, they'll be looking at existing resources. Second, they're going to be looking at wave energy and wave action, the distance it is from shore, the depth in which the sculptures lie, and that's going to dictate where they're going to allow a permit from an environmental perspective. So you have a number of agencies that will be reviewing this project, including Miami-Dade County Durham, the Florida Department of Environmental Protection, and most likely the federal government as well, NOAA and potentially NIMPS, in order to provide that feedback. So there will be an extensive environmental review process in order to select the final location. Any structure that is installed offshore will have to have necessary footings to hold it in place. So for example, we have the Jose Cuervo Reef located at 2nd Street. That is an example of a project that's been permitted. We also are looking at offshore reef balls. The project that we have going on right now with the University of Miami U-Link is looking at some of those types of structures with footings. So that is something that when we're talking about the sculpture design, will have to be built in and the environmental regulatory agencies will be reviewing. In terms of actions and next step, this was a resolution in November that did pass through the consent to that the city is in support. So today's presentation was just a presentation so that this group could learn more about this exciting initiative and ask Colin any questions to clarify anything that may have been still questioning. So I think, you know, right now there's no action needed. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. That helps. Commissioner Gongora, you're.
Yes, thank you. Betsy clarified some of the points that I was going to make. The idea of doing some kind of eco art gallery has been discussed in Miami Beach since before I was first elected in 2006. I remember having conversations about doing a project like this back in 2006 and 2007. At the time, it was discussed by ECOM, the Environmental Coalition, and Luis Rodriguez. It never got funding or traction in the city. So the fact that Reefline has come together and is putting together private resources outside of the city of Miami Beach to do something so exciting, I think is extremely commendable, and I'm a big supporter. which is why I wanted to sponsor the resolution in November. And yes, it passed. Yes, we all are supporting you. This was your moment to do a presentation at the committee level. I appreciate Betsy's comment because I understand the level of multi-governmental permitting that's going to have to take place for these art installations. So for those of you that have concerns about the environmental impact, I assure you Betsy wouldn't be here with a smile on her face speaking so favorably about something that would potentially be damaging for the environment. This is going to be safe. It is going to be something fresh and new. It is going to be something that environmentalists, divers, snorkelers, marine people will enjoy, but will also be something exciting for art lovers and perhaps add a new component to Art Basel and some of these art weeks that we have throughout the year by adding something. So, and although it's a little cold for me to go in the water in December for Art Basel, but Europeans seem to love it and have no issues. So there will be something that can happen. So I support it. Thank you for the presentation today.
Thank you, Commissioner Gongora, for those comments. I absolutely echo the spirit of what you have shared. I see no other hands. This was a discussion item, so hearing no additional comments, we will conclude the item. And thank you, Colin, for coming in, and thank you, Ms. Wheaton, for the presentation. With that said, let's move, if we may, to, I believe, our last item of the day, and perhaps our last item of 2020, the renovation of the Seagull Hotel. Item number 7 is a discussion item.
Yep. Did we do item number 4?
We did. Yeah, Tom, okay. We did.
Okay.
Yep, thank you. So I believe 7 is the last one. Commissioner Arriola, do you want to be recognized or would you like to hear from the administration first?
Yeah, I'm happy to tee this up. It's a, I think, a very exciting renovation of the Seagull Hotel in the Collins Park neighborhood. I believe folks in the neighborhood are also very excited about this. I think most of us know the Bulgari brand. It's one of the most recognized high-end luxury brands in the world. And this would be their first hotel development in the United States. And I think it's very exciting that they've selected Miami Beach as their first project. I think we've got some folks from that organization that want to show us their vision for the project. And then I think they're going to be asking us to consider a couple of things, amendments regarding setbacks and height requirements, as well as a potential vacation of 21st Street. So with that, I think I'll turn it over to Tom or if there's some folks that are going to be presenting. I'm not sure.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'll be very brief because I think there are some representatives of Bulgari who would like to have show you a very brief presentation. The administration did meet with representatives of Bulgari about a month ago, and they showed us their preliminary plans. And it's, as you'll see from their presentation, it's quite a stunning proposal from an architectural standpoint. This was a dual referral to both the Land Use Committee and to the Finance Committee. I believe this is on as a discussion item on Friday's Finance Committee. And it contains two main components. One is a proposal for LDR amendments. They submitted those to us late last week. We are going to meet internally, and then we have a meeting scheduled with representatives of Bulgari to go over the LDR amendments in more detail later this week. And what we would recommend is that the item be continued to the January meeting so that we could include in the package the actual ordinance amendments and also a little bit more of a write-up. I believe that the representatives of Bulgari want to provide you with a brief preview of what those LDR amendments contemplated are. The second major component is the proposed vacation of the south side of 21st Street. The reason for this is to enlarge the size of the property so that they can pick up additional FAR. They are in the process of getting appraisals for this. That will be handled largely by the Finance Committee. And the City Attorney's Office is also doing a charter analysis of any potential charter issues to ensure that the proposal to vacate 21st Street won't run afoul of the charter. With that said, we've recommended that this item be discussed and that you provide some initial feedback and direction, and that it be continued to the January 2020 meeting where we can bring you back additional details regarding the proposed LDR amendments.
Thank you for that, Tom. And do we have representatives of the project that want to be recognized?
Yes, this is Carter McDowell, Pickles and Sundberg, representing the applicant and the property owner.
Okay, morning, Carter.
Good morning. We have actually submitted a presentation that I'm going to run through very quickly, skip over a lot of it, to be honest. Most of you have seen much of this, but I wanted to just go through it quickly. As Tom and as Commissioner Areola said, Fulgari is a internationally recognized luxury brand. They have six existing hotels located in truly exceptional locations around the world. This will be the first Bulgari hotel in the United States, which I think is a great statement for Miami Beach, that they chose Miami Beach as its first location in the United States. Skip next slides, and I'm going to skip through a bunch here. I'm going to go through a couple images, which will show you some of the existing product, just because others may be interested in it. It's a joint venture between Bulgari and Marriott. Marriott's the operating company, but it is the Bulgari brand hotel. Next slide. And they are, just to give you an idea of where they fall in the luxury spectrum, they have the highest revenue per room of luxury hotels in five of the six locations they are around the world, and they're number two in the second. They are really at the very top end of the luxury market. It is a remarkable brand. They are number two in service worldwide in the luxury market. Next slide. Next slide. Here's a couple images of Milan. Next slide. Next slide. Just a typical room. Next slide. And this is one of their locations that we all hope to visit someday. In Bali. Next slide. Next slide. And you can see that the design is tailored to each of its communities and responds to its location. Next slide. London. Next slide. Next slide. Next slide. Beijing. Next slide. Next slide. Next slide. Dubai. Next slide. Next slide. It is that entire island in front of you. It's both hotel and residential in Dubai. Next slide. The historic Chamber of Commerce building in Shanghai. Next slide. Next slide. Next slide. They are working currently on projects that they will be opening shortly in Paris, Rome, Moscow, and Tokyo, and Miami Beach will be next after that. And with a hopeful opening, depending on process, near the end of 2024, or possibly early 25, depending on scheduling. Next slide. Next slide. So this gives you the context, and this is important to our discussion of the code amendments. You see the project outlined in blue. It's an oceanfront property on the very northern edge of the architectural district overlay. It's within the local Collins Avenue Ocean Drive Historic District. The Collins Park is within the district. The W Hotel that you see on the right is not within the district, within the architectural district. You see the Satay that is actually on both the west and the south, and the enormous Satay garage and condominium hotel building to our south. Next slide. This gives you really the context that shows that our existing seven-story building next to the garage and the Satay behind. On the left, you see the architecturally significant facade facing 21st Street. Next slide. Here you see the proposed project. And the remarkable thing about this project is that it is scaled to respect and highlight that historic facade. We have a one-story rooftop addition, which is one of the code amendments we're going to talk about. There is a eastern addition, which is the height of the historic building, and there is a southern addition, which you'll see in a moment, that is the height of the with the rooftop addition. Those are the code amendments we need in order for us to do this project. And it is important to note that the Bulgari room standards are extraordinary in keeping with the quality of the product. There are somewhere between 150 and 175 rooms in the historic structure, depending on when you look at the drawings. We will be reducing that room count down to approximately 100 to 105 units, but they will all be large, luxurious rooms and suites on the project. Next slide shows you before and after. The before on the left, the project on the right. Next slide. This is a view from the public walkway leading to the beach, showing the eastern addition. Those will be two new suites. And you see the settee behind. And one of the important things about this slide is we are going to reopen the easternmost wing that you see extending out to the left. There will be a public there will be a restaurant on the ground floor that will be publicly accessible directly from the public walkway, not just through the hotel lobby, and a spa on the upper level, which will also be open to the public for those who want to take advantage of it. Next slide gives you the before and after. You can see, particularly in the before on the left, the current state of that eastern extension, and it's really in poor condition and has turned its back on the public realm. The new project will very much embrace the park and the public realm. Next slide. Here you see a view looking back toward the W, and you see the southern addition for the first time in this view. One of the real challenges of this project is that the historic building has 50% of its space facing due south because the settee wasn't there at the time it was built. And so we have a building, an historic building, although I will say that next slide, you'll see the before and after. The southern facade has no architectural detailing at all, but it faces directly into an 11-story garage now. So the southern addition is what is necessary for us to be able to reorient the south side of the building toward the ocean, because obviously you can't have super luxury hotel rooms facing 11-story garage head on. It just won't work. Next slide. Here's a view looking back at the settee. You can see that the one-story rooftop addition is equal to or slightly lower than the garage of the settee. There is mechanical equipment and there is a rooftop pool. There's a major suite on that top floor that will have its own separate rooftop pool. There are no public facilities on that rooftop level. Next slide. Here you see architectural models that show the project. The four views, top left shows how we are restoring and highlighting that historic facade as it faces the park and 21st Street. It is the entry sequence for this historic building. You see the rooftop addition and the eastern addition. Slide number two shows you, again, you see the southern addition looking back from the ocean toward the hotel with the settee on the left and behind. Bottom left is the southern elevation. That louver system that has been designed and incorporated into the overall project is really a beautiful, subtle response to that garage. If you think of a Venetian blind, if you look straight through an open Venetian blind, you can see straight out. But if you look up or down, you lose the view of what's above and below you. And so it serves the purpose of screening the garage from those new luxury suites and rooms that will be facing eastward, but still have a direct view of the garage. The bottom right corner shows you the rear of the building. It's currently a blank facade. There are a few windows back there, but it's a poorly designed rear facade. The idea here is to make sure that there is a elegant architectural treatment of all four sides. So there is no rear to this property. There is back of house on the ground, but we're going to cover that so that our neighboring property owners no longer see the back of house operations. Next slide. Architectural renderings. Next slide. east and west elevations. Next slide. This shows you the construction of the additions, and the designers have been very careful to create three small additions as opposed to some, a larger massive addition that might occur in one location to respect the scale and the importance of that historic facade facing the street and the park. You have a one-story rooftop addition. You have a southern addition along the south side that you see in gray on the top right. And you have an eastward addition that is the height of the existing historic building. Bottom right, you see it all assembled. You see the blue that's peeking up there. That's an existing part of the historic structure where the occupied rooftop addition is no taller than that. Next slide. Okay. Next slide. I believe there should be two more or three more documents we sent. They're separate, actually. We submitted PDFs of the proposed code amendments, and I want to just run you through them very quickly, if we can pull those up, hopefully. But it's looking like maybe we can't. So what we are proposing is a very simple amendment to two sections of the code. Those code amendments involve the development area regulations for the RM3. It's section 142-246, and it is subsection C. The code already allows in a locally designated historic district ground level additions that can be as high as 10 stories. There are other, but the architectural district is excluded from that. We're seeking to amend that section to provide that those lots that are within the architectural district that are oceanfront lots but do not front on Collins Avenue would fall within this one section of the code, and that would allow the two additions that we've talked about. It's still subject to HPB review and approval. They have full discretion to approve the additions to any of the buildings. So that would be one addition, one code amendment. The second code amendment, and I'm sorry that we can't put this in front of you, it deals with section 142-1161, subsection D, which is rooftop additions. Unlike all of the local historic districts in Miami Beach, the architectural district has a restriction that allows no rooftop additions at all. And so we would, again, be seeking to exempt those oceanfront lots that do not front on Collins Avenue from that limitation on rooftop additions. It would allow us to have a one-story rooftop addition subject to all of the sight line restrictions that apply to all rooftop additions throughout the city. And the, again, discretion would be given to the Historic Preservation Board to review and approve the process, the project as proposed. And those are the two amendments that we're seeking. We have, as Tom said, we have a meeting set with staff, a working meeting on this Thursday to go through this, assuming we're in agreement on the approach, which I believe we are, at least conceptually, since we've talked with the administration about this. We would come back to your January meeting with a draft ordinance for further review by you. I would also note we have done significant community outreach. We've met with Collins Park Neighborhood Association. They're very supportive of the project. I've met with Daniel at MDPL, explained the project. Obviously, he's not seen the final, so he can't take a position on it, but he indicated he thought it was an appropriate approach. And the thing that I find remarkable is it's a high-end luxury product coming to Miami Beach, but with a very subtle program that allows us to create the quality of environment that we have to create for the brand, but doesn't overwhelm the historic structure with a 200-foot addition or a 250-foot addition or any of the other major approaches that we've seen recently on other projects. It is quiet, it's subtle, it's beautifully designed. I didn't mention the architects are Terrio Viel, who are based in Milan. They've done all of the Bulgari hotels around the world. And with that, we are asking for an action by you today, but we wanted to bring these issues to your attention and ask for any input that would be appropriate for us and for staff as we meet on Thursday to work on the draft ordinance. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Carter, for the presentation. I see a couple of hands in the public. Let's start there. Mr. Wayne Roberts.
Let me say that I love this project. I think it fits the area perfectly. He's not asking for this some 300-foot new tower, slammed in between two buildings as part of the deal. I think they should be commended. The only concern I have is I heard through the grapevine that they're going to ask for, because of whatever they're doing, they're going to require some FAR increases. And instead of asking the community for the FAR, they're going to get some sort of, street square footage given to them to avoid that question. And, as a policy, that's got to stop, So I don't know how to get around that, but we shouldn't be giving away FAR with street vacations. And if that's the case, we need to place the FAR in front of the voters, unfortunately. But I'm sure we'll pass 80%. I just don't think that's the right approach to help developers do their deals. It should be based on voters' prerogatives. Thank you.
Next up is Daniel Seraldo.
Yes, hi, Daniel Seraldo with the Miami Design Preservation League. First off, to Carter's point, I had looked at just the design, what you all saw there on the PowerPoint. And obviously, as the prior caller mentioned, seeing a proposal from a high-end brand that actually doesn't look to, shove in a high-rise over a beautiful historic building is a welcome change. And so obviously we look forward to studying that more. However, on the note of the FAR, there's not a lot in this referral item. So I don't know how much do they want, what is the public benefit? The staff mentioned that it's not clear what the public benefit would be. As Wayne mentioned, it might end up being something that the community does support because it does look so far to be like an interesting project. So hopefully next time it comes, there's more data for the community to review because the referral was very basic, and I look forward to looking into more of the details. Thanks.
Let's see. I believe that concludes our public comment. I'd like to recognize our representative from the city attorney's office, Nick Kalurgis. Maybe he could offer a couple thoughts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'd just like to make a few brief comments on the specifically on the vacation of the 21st Street right-of-way. Since that would be a transfer of city property, it requires analysis under Section 1.03 of the city charter. My office, in consultation with Planning and Public Works, is continuing to study information we've received from the applicant, and including their position paper, to determine what procedural requirements would apply to the vacation, including whether a referendum is required. Ultimately, the applicability of the city charter is a determination that the city attorney will make. And as Tom pointed out during the presentation, the transaction itself is going to the Finance Committee for discussion this Friday.
Thank you for those comments.
I apologize for not addressing the alley vacation. I didn't because it is going to Finance.
Yeah. If you want to say a quick Carter, if you want to say just a quick word about it. I was going to bring it back to this, but if you could, say a quick word.
So as part of this project, in order to create the quality of environment that we need to create for this brand, we have filed an application seeking to vacate the southern half of 21st Street as it fronts along this property. As you know from prior events, technically, and it is a legal technicality, the adjoining property owner owns the fee simple title underneath the dedicated right-of-way to the center line of the road. We have filed an application seeking to vacate that section of 21st Street. It would increase our lot size. What it would really do is release the dedicated easement from that portion of land we do own, so it would be incorporated into our lot size. There's approximately 6,000 square feet. It's a little bit more than that, of the adjoining right-of-way that would become part of our lot that would then be applicable to the 2.0 FAR. It will allow us an additional 13,400 and some odd square feet of development. It is critical to being able to create the quality of environment that the brand demands in this location. As you've seen, the project is modestly scaled and carefully designed. We think it's important. It will be fully vetted through the roadway vacation process. We have actually submitted an appraisal that we did of the value of those rights that values those rights at approximately $5 million. So there will be a public benefit discussion of how to utilize those public benefit dollars. We think there are some great things that can happen in the Collins Park neighborhood, but those decisions are left and directed by the commission ultimately. And there will be a further discussion at finance. And of course, we'll go through the full public hearing process for that agreement and that process. The street that we're seeking to vacate does not reach to the beach. Nick's office is looking at that. And we're confident that it's an appropriate application, but the city attorney's office will make the final determination. That is, in a nutshell, the roadway vacation application. We look forward to further discussions about it, both at finance and at the full commission, and ultimately, I believe, some planning board and other locations also. Thank you for your time. And sorry, I didn't address it because it's really on a different committee agenda.
No problem. Thank you for that information. Nick,
go ahead, Nick. To Carter's last point. I meant to add the vacation is within the purview of the finance committee as a transfer of city property.
As we sort of bring this back to the virtual dais, colleagues, this will be heard on Friday at Finance. We heard the request from the city administration that they have time to sort of digest some of this and bring it back to us in writing in January. So I think our action today is we're going to hear it in January. But with that said, let me open. Let me see if anyone has anything they want to say. Commissioner Gongo.
Yes, thank you. Obviously, it's very exciting when you hear of a brand such as Bulgari coming in and seeing their beautiful properties around the world and their success record. It's kind of, the Seagull's been kind of one of the leftover places of old school Miami Beach. When that area didn't have a W Hotel and a Satay, it had a Holiday Inn and the Kitchen Club, which many of people of my age, Ramon, remember fondly. And actually, the original Gay Beach before Palace opened and it moved to 12th Street. So it's interesting to see how this entire area has elevated in Collins Park with the W, the Satay, and now the Bulgari. So, of course, we're very excited. I don't have the specific LDR land development regulations in front of me to review, so I look forward to seeing those in January. But certainly they look and sound very modest thus far for a project of this caliber. So I'm excited to seeing them back next month. I'm a little less excited, frankly, by the vacation of the street request to accumulate FAR. I understand that's before the finance committee, which I'm not on. I'll be curious to hear what they say. But I would encourage you to look at how you can create that beautiful Bulgari property not just this development, but all developments, because this waiver of FAR is becoming more and more common, and it's something that I'm not comfortable with. But with that said, I'm supportive of the project, and I look forward to seeing you back next month.
Thank you, Commissioner Gongora. And seeing no other hands, I will look forward to hearing the project in just about 72 hours at Finance. Commissioner Arriola, you're right.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all excited about getting a Bulgari branded hotel here. You know, when you hear the presentation and you hear, you know, the repositioning of that hotel, which, you know, I don't know what their daily room rates are, but I imagine it's not at the higher end of the spectrum. And, you know, having fewer hotel rooms, larger, nicer, attracting, you know, perhaps a different crowd. Learning lessons from this project as well as other projects, particularly in that area, that have, I think, upgraded our hotel stock, might inform us when we start thinking about the larger discussion we're all having in the MXC district on what we're going to do there. And, you know, I, for one, would definitely like to see us try to attract more investment into that area and reposition a lot of those properties from low-end hotels into higher-end properties. So this is instructive for us as we move forward citywide with sort of, you know, redevelopment opportunities.
Yeah, and I would just add and echo my colleague's thoughts. It's always wonderful to hear marquee names coming to Miami Beach. Even during this time of the pandemic, we continue to see strong interest in our community. Done right and done properly, that can be a wonderful thing in the long-term best interest of our community. So with that said, Tom, we're going to continue till January. I believe we could show that done by acclamation. Tom, do you need anything else from us right now?
Okay. I have everything. And, thank you.
You have everything. And I believe, colleagues, we have concluded our last item. So unless anyone has anything else to say, I want to thank everyone for another productive meeting. Happy holidays. And we'll look forward to seeing everyone in 2021. So thank you to all. And this meeting is adjourned.